Good morning. Everybody, I'd like to call the Environmental Resources Policy and Finance Committee to order. First order of business on the agenda is the approval of the minutes. Representative Johnson, would you move the minutes, please?
So moved.
Any discussion on the minutes, additions or corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The minutes are approved. Yep. Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just before we get going, I was wondering, do you have any plans on having any hearings on chronic wasting disease so we can get an update on what's happened since we were last here? And I just think it would be good to get something on the record as to what's been done and how the money's been spent and any suggestions.
Thank you. And to that, I would say, yes, we have talked about it and trying to figure out just exactly what would be the kind of the guardrails on a hearing and informational session and, you know, having Board of Animal Health and DNR here along with other people that are interested. I'm sure it would generate a fair amount of interest. So I'd be happy to work with you to see what you think we could do for a format.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure if we'd be able to get the 450,000 deer hunters in the room, but you know, they can watch on TV, I guess.
Most of them are working at this time, at least in my district, except for us old guys. Anything else? Okay, very good. Representative Nash, welcome.
Good morning.
Representative Nash, House File 2775, and I would move to lay this over for possible inclusion in a later bill. So with that, Representative Nash, proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, members. 2775 is a bill that would seek to loosen or change the apprentice hunter law so it can accommodate people who are developmentally disabled and they are reaching the 18-year of age landmark. Currently, they are precluded from using that after they turn 18. And the program is very good, and I have a video testifier. He was unable to be here today. His name is Steve Panaz. You might recognize him if you watch cable TV fishing shows. And he has a developmentally disabled son whose name is Pierce. Pierce is a great kid, and they hunt and they fish together. But once he turns 18, he's not going to be able to take advantage of the hunter safety or the apprentice hunters program. And Steve relayed it to me this way. He says, "Jim, my son is a safe hunter as long as he's with me, and I would never take him out into the field without being with me. But he's required to do some things that he cannot get accomplished." And I'm trying to make it so that parents who have developmentally disabled kids that, you know, enjoy the same rich history that you and I do of hunting with our kids can continue to do that. And as I said, there's a video testimony, and I'm going to let Steve talk because he's going to convey it to you directly, if you would. Thank you.
Hi, thank you for this opportunity. My name is Steve Panaz. My wife Karen and I live in the West Metro. We have a son, Pierce, who's 17, born with Down syndrome, and a fun kid to hang around with, very active in sports, but he's also active in the outdoors. My request today is to extend the Hunter Apprentice Program. Under the current law, Pierce needs to attend and pass firearm safety course that requires, I believe, 100 questions. He can take it online or take it through a regular class. The challenge is twofold. One, I don't think Pierce could pass the class. And number two, even if he could, I really don't want him licensed to be able to carry a firearm without direct supervision. So my request is this, that we could extend the apprentice program to include people with mental disabilities like Pierce with Down syndrome so they could continue to hunt under direct supervision from parents like myself. Pierce has had a chance to hunt turkey successfully. He's hunted pheasants successfully. He's an incredible shot, and I really want to extend this time with him in the field, and I really appreciate this opportunity.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I believe the department has a few words as well.
Sure. Who do we have testifying? Oh, great. Mr. Stalo, come on down.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
How are you?
City members. Thank you for having me. We're on board with this.
Would you identify yourself for the record, please?
Yeah. My name is Greg Salo. I'm the Assistant Director for the Division of Enforcement with the DNR.
Thank you. Proceed.
Mr. Chair, we currently have a statute right now that allows hunting by persons with developmental disabilities, and they're given a provisional firearm safety certificate. And it sounds like the last testimony I heard there, they would fall underneath that. The requirement with that is once they're given a provisional firearm safety certificate, they can hunt with an adult who also has firearm safety training, but that adult does not need a license to hunt. They just need the firearm safety training. So there's an avenue there, and I think a lot of the issues that were brought up, we'd like to actually see it extended beyond the developmental disability as it's described in our current statute and include a little wider range. We're seeing a big increase in participation with mentored hunts and people with disabilities. So I think we can work with the current statute we have, which is 97B.1055, and make it work for everybody. Currently, our electronic licensing system is set up so if someone buys a apprentice hunter validation, they get two shots at it. And they get to do it for 2 years. And if we were to change that, we'd have to go back into allow more hunter validations to be bought. We'd have to change the programming with the vendor to allow that.
And if we were to do that, how long would it take to change the programming?
I don't have an answer for you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. I'm sure you can get that.
Yes.
Okay. Other questions or comments, members? Really? Bunch of eighth graders here. Representative Nash, we're obviously going to lay this over. I would encourage you to continue working with Director Salo to get the bugs ironed out on this and bring forth a bill that actually opens up more doors and more opportunities for more people to be able to experience the great outdoors.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you have my word that I will work with the department so that we can actually get this achieved. I think we're all on board with the concept. And if we can make some time to come to my office and have research come along, we'll figure this out.
Great. Anything else? Thank you. 2775 is laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yep. Okay. All right. Next, we're going to do House File 3142. excuse me. This is my bill. This is I would move that House File 3142 be laid over for possible inclusion at a later date. Members, this is an issue that was brought to me. This is not something that I laid around in my office one afternoon trying to think of something to do this session. We have an extensive ATV trail network in the Beltrami Island State Forest, and the Hayes Park is within the Beltrami Island State Forest. Currently, you can't have ATVs in a state park. So the people that I represent, my constituents, approached me and said, what about the possibility of having ATVs in Hayes Lake State Park? And we started digging into it. The idea is that there's several cabins in the area around there. There's a lot of grandmas and grandpas that like to take their kids to the park in the summertime. And because of the trail network and so forth that's there, they like to load the kids up and go down to the park and would like to go and have a picnic and so forth. They're swimming at the beach. But currently, they can't do that. They have to get into their pickups or their vehicles. So you can see that there's a letter in your packet from the Friends of Hayes Lake State Park that's signed by Dan Rothine and Carla Olson. Some people I've known for many years. I used to teach with Carla at the school. And then you can also see that there's an email from Jeff Pulowski, our Rosa County Environmental Services Director, and also our administrator, where they support this idea. And just to be clear, If you were to, if we were to have this come into law, you'd be required to have the park stickers and so forth to get in. You'd have to stay on the designated roadways. You can't use it to go around the barriers and drive down to the beach and all that sort of stuff. So that's my motivation behind it. And then, of course, we also have a Vermilion State Park, and there was a couple of gentlemen here earlier. There they are over there that are a little interested in this. And if Representative Hackbarth, if you'd like to come down and say a couple of words about this, I'd appreciate that. And we have George Radke, the president of the All-Terrain Vehicle Association of Minnesota, and Tom Hackbarth, former state representative who does some work for the ATV Association. So, gentlemen, identify yourselves for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Tom Hackbarth with the All-Terrain Vehicle Association of Minnesota, and I have the president of the association with me today, and he would like to speak to the issue and the bill.
Thank you.
George Radke, the president of the All-Terrain Vehicle Association. Mr. Chair and committee, we are already allowed in several of the state campgrounds, and first of all, we've not seen any issues with it. We're not looking to ride in the campgrounds or in the parks, but what we get asked constantly over and over again is where can we camp and ride? The whole point being is that it's not really conducive to have to trailer in and out of a camping area. And all we're looking for is to be able to use the camping and the facilities, and I would guess we're going to bring some revenue into the parks. We've got a lot of ATVers. There's probably about 500,000 riders in the state of Minnesota today, and this is one of the biggest questions we get asked over and over and over again. Where can I camp that I can ride from? So we're not looking to actually use the park itself to ride in. We're using the facilities and the camping. That's what we're looking for.
And Mr. Radke, I agree with you. I think that in a place like Hayes Lake State Park, we're going to increase the number of people that actually are going to be in the park. And quite frankly, we've had this discussion in my office and here in committee. I'm disappointed that DNR continues to diminish services to some of our small regional parks like Hayes and Old Mill and those types of things. And what I'm trying to do is figure out ways to get more people into the parks in vast areas of the state of Minnesota, and I think that this is one of the things that will do that. And I'm very hopeful that we can get this through.
Thank you. As a pilot, I would hope that we would be able to show that our riders are very respectable when it comes to the park systems and such. Many of these people use the parks already, just not as ATVers. So.
And to Mr. Radke's point, members, I'd encourage you to look at line point 1.18. This is a pilot, as he said, and it expires in January 1st of 2024. Questions? Members? Representative Lewick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to both testifiers. Not really a question, but a comment. In the area of Aiken, Crow Wing County, we've got a lot of small towns. We've got some state rec areas and other things literally co-located with the small towns. And we run into that same issue, that same question. How can I use the campground without having to park my ATV someplace else in it? And so this is clearly a statewide issue. I would hope that we get a little more time under the belt and we can look at this really across the statewide perspective because, as you say, we're frankly just saying you folks aren't welcome. And that's not what we should be doing, particularly we want to encourage everybody to use those public facilities and certainly not asking to in any way start riding ATVs directly in the park. We're simply asking basically for the same access that you have with any other four-wheel vehicle. And it's a big deal at the local level, and it complicates city councils and townships on trying to make sure that they can seamlessly offer, that element of recreation in their area. So, again, thank you for the testifiers, and we need to stay focused and try to expand this statewide.
Thank you. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Since the DNR was referenced, I would be interested to know if they had
thoughts on our list
support or opposition. Okay, thanks.
Director Leverstead, you want to come down, please? Director Leverstead and I have had some conversations about this. He had an alternative solution at the MinUSA snowmobile ride, but I won't unveil that today. No, I'm kidding. Director, identify yourself for the record, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Phil Leversedge. I'm the Deputy Director, so Assistant Director for the Division of Parks and Trails with the DNR. And I'd like to speak to the bill, but first I would like to state that we do support motorized recreation throughout Minnesota, and our department and division works closely with ATVAM and other stakeholders to provide motorized trails primarily in state forests, and we currently allow access in and out of several of our state forest campgrounds. There are about 55 state forest campgrounds spread around the state, and they're the campgrounds that have the most immediate access to the motorized trail networks. And we are working to open more of those up to motorized use, and we could do that pretty simply because the rules in state forests and the Outdoor Recreation Act for state forests are most permissive for specialized recreation or motorized recreation. We believe that the bill as written is inconsistent with the Outdoor Recreation Act, in that the Outdoor Recreation Act does not suggest allowing motorized off-highway vehicles in state parks. So we are not supportive of the bill as it stands.
Thank you. You said several state park or state forest campgrounds. What have you got a list of those?
I've got a list of a few of them. Sure. The one I'm most familiar with is the Finland Forest Campground, located in Finland, Minnesota, in the Finland State Forest. I was a state park manager at Tatagoosh for about 25 years and was the manager of the Finland State Forest Campground, and we were able to open that as part of the OHV planning efforts in the Finland State Forest so that there is ingress and egress out of that campground. A couple others are the Gafford State Forest Campground and then the Magie State Forest. There's Lost Lake and Larson Lake in the George Washington State Forest and Snake Creek in the Richard J. Doerr Forest. Bemis Hills and Clear River Campgrounds in Beltrami State Forest have limited OHV camping. They're not very developed campgrounds. They're small. There is opportunity to maybe increase some investment and improve the amenities that are available there. And they are right on the trail system within Beltrami.
Thank you. Next, Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So overall, I'm hearing on the one hand, this is no big deal, this is just a pilot, everybody relax, it's not a big deal. But then on the other hand, I'm also hearing, hey, let's expand this statewide. And that really concerns me. And it's not that, you know, I know the testifier mentioned that, you know, your users are, you know, respectful of campgrounds and everything, and it's the noise factor that I would be most concerned about. You know, when I go to the state parks and camp in the campgrounds with my kids, the whole idea is that you're really in nature and it's quiet and you really have that immersive experience away from, you know, vehicles running around and having to hear all that that noise. And so I'm hearing two things here. So it's a little confusing about what the goals are. You know, 55 different state forest campgrounds, that's kind of a lot to choose from if we can go more in that direction to expanding that to folks, it sounds like. And my knowledge of the trails I've used is that those areas are actually closer to some of the trails and easier to get to. So it's just, and it sounds like we're going to hear from the Parks and Trails Council later as well. But, you know, I'm just looking right now, 5% of Minnesotans own, you know, an ATV, and 30% of Minnesotans visit state parks. Because I know for my family, that might be a reason to not visit a state park if we knew there's going to be ATVs in and out of there. So I just, it's not clear to me what really the end goal is here, if either one of you wants to speak to that.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Radke, yes.
Mr. Chair, committee, our goal is not to ride in the park. We would be no different than any other traffic that you would have coming in or out of the park, trucks, cars, motorcycles. Today, an OHM that's got an OHM sticker on it, as long as they're a licensed vehicle, also can come in and out of the park. We're not looking to be to use the park to ride in and or to create any additional noise. We don't anticipate that we're going to do anything more than ride in, ride out, the same as it would be any other licensed vehicle using the existing roads and such that are in place today. We're not asking to be able to, you know, add additional riding or additional noise or anything else like that. We have noise requirements or sound requirements on ATVs today. They need to meet those requirements. It makes them so that they're not much louder than the bulk of our vehicles on the roads today. The other side of the coin is, as well, we work with our enforcement folks to make sure that they stay within those bounds, and we support that.
Thank you. Representative Beckerfin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I read the bill. I get that's what you're asking for. It's one of those kind of slippery slope things where I can see in the future the argument's going to be, you know, in 2024, well, see, this has gone fine. Let's go ahead and open up these other areas. And I just really think that we should keep in mind what the state parks are for folks and what the kind of end goal is. Because the bill is pretty, you know, 2024 is kind of a long time, and I just have a lot of concerns about the direction we're going here. And I'm all for more people using the parks. I'm just not sure that this is the way to get there. Thanks.
Representative Beckerfin, when you get to be my age, 2024 is not a long time, but that's okay. Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm just backtracking here to see if I heard correctly that all these vehicles would have to bear the state park sticker, so they'd all be buying into this?
That's the idea, that they would be participating in the park system the same as everybody else would. Would
correct.
Come in or come out.
That's correct. Mr. Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So all those funds would actually go directly into trail maintenance?
We go to the Parks and Trails Division. I'm sure that Director Leversedge can tell us where the sticker money goes specifically.
Okay, and Mr. Chair, lastly, how many bikes are we talking about? I heard 5% or whatever, but I'm just wondering, what's the number of participants in?
In the state of Minnesota, there are just a fraction less than 300,000 registered for recreation ATVs in the state of Minnesota.
Thank you.
Director Leversedge.
Mr. Chair, members, state park permit revenues or state park vehicle pass revenues go back into the state park account, one of the natural resource accounts, and those funds are used for the operation and maintenance of the state park system.
Thank you. Representative Swedzinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question to the Deputy Commissioner. So those forest campgrounds, you know, all we're talking about is a pilot project. And what are the experiences of the campers at those forest campgrounds with the ATVs in them for a mom and dad and some kids? Are those campgrounds not utilized by those people? Or is it only folks with ATVs that use those particular parks?
Director.
Mr. Chair, Representative, my experience is limited to the Finland Forest Campground, and it, when we opened it to use by motorized vehicles, the motorized use, of course, increased, but it was still used by other campers as well.
Okay.
Representative Swedzinski.
All right. So you didn't see a large fall off of usage by non-potential ATV users?
Mr. Chair, Representative, no, we did not. But we We do know from surveys that our current state park users, we surveyed both in 2012 and again in 2017 and asked specifically questions about opening up state parks, the increased motorized use. And in 2012, there were about 60% of the survey respondents said they were either opposed or strongly opposed to opening state parks to motorized use, and about 12% were in favor. In 2017, with a more direct question asking about ride-in access to park campgrounds, only 15% supported or strongly supported that, and over 46% opposed or strongly opposed it.
Okay.
Thanks, Mr. Swiginski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question maybe to the chair on the bill itself. As far as the structure, you know, you have an expiration date. You know, that data is always important. Do you have any ideas as far as kind of a report that would get done from, you know, before the expiration so that the legislature can make an informed decision on ridership, usage, feedback, you know, that sort of thing, so that we can make an informed with the idea that this would either get expanded. I mean, it is only a pilot project, which I think is a wise way to go in this particular area, in a very unique area. I'm guessing there's probably interest across the state, but also want to be respectful for things and data-driven decisions. So,
thank you. Well, again, I would refer you back to answer that question. I refer you back to the letter from the Friends of Hayes Lake State Park. They are strongly in support of this. This is kind of a local issue. These people are very connected to that park. We're not expanding it to anything else except Vermilion and Hayes. And I don't believe for one second that Diane and Carla have any desire to somehow make the park less attractive to people. They're actually trying to create more opportunities. These are local people with their feet on the grounds who volunteer a tremendous amount of time in this park. I'm sorry, folks. They know this park a whole lot better than any of us in this room do. And I would be willing to bet that if I asked you to show your hands how many people have been to Hayes Lake State Park, my guess is that there would probably be one or two. There you go. So that's and that's my point. So I'm not trying to be disrespectful to the people who oppose this in their polls and so forth. I am trying to be respectful to the people who've sent this letter and the people who asked me to do this. I didn't ask them to do this. This comes from them. And the Roseau County commissioners feel the same way. So the degree to which we're going to get some feedback and so forth, yeah, the feedback's going to come from the local people. And if statewide, you know, some folks don't like it, I would encourage them to come on up to Hayes and be there someday when three or four people come in with their grandchildren riding on their ATVs. We have two of the finest ATV manufacturers in the world. One of them I can see from my back window, and the other one is only 65 miles away. And there are restrictions on emissions. There's restrictions on noise. These companies, Polaris, Arcticat, /Textron, do an outstanding job of manufacturing great vehicles that a lot of people really enjoy. And I'm just responding to the concerns of my constituents. So, Representative Swiginski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, to me it makes sense. You know, last year the parks came to us and asked us to raise the price of, you know, park passes, yearly passes, and the rest. And we complied because we have a lot of parks that are operating in the red the way it is. And, you know, if you've got a park that's out there asking for an opportunity to, one, increase usage of these parks so we have less parks operating in the red, and find niche markets where they're allowing these things, then I think we should be moving that forward. So.
Thank you. Director Leversedge, do you have any kind of a report on park attendance in calendar year 17?
Mr. Chair, we do have that information. I don't have that with me today, but can get that to you.
In a nutshell.
Overall attendance in state parks is a little over 10 million.
Compared to the previous year?
State park use is increasing on the average about 5% per year.
Okay. So, and with that, folks, I'd remind you that when I brought the bill forward, The administration was asking for a $5 increase, and we actually, or a dollar, and we actually made it 2 and 10. And we were told that park attendance was going to go down, not by the administration, but by others. Part of the reason for me driving the 2 and the 10 was because I was hopeful that that increased revenue would actually result in some increased services to some of our small regional parks. And the feedback that I'm getting from folks is that it's not. So we need to work together on these issues to solve some problems and move forward. Representative Brian Johnson.
Mr. Chair, I have a couple clarifications I want to make and then a couple questions as well.
Can you speak into the microphone, please?
One of the questions, clarification, this bill just allows access to the campground and out of the park, not in the park itself?
Right. You have to stay on any motorized vehicle pathways or roads or whatever you want to call it now. You cannot leave where motorized vehicles currently are allowed. Okay. And that would not be the ones that that the park ranger can drive on and go someplace else with his, obviously. So,
thank you. And then for the deputy director, you talked about that we have these campgrounds, that they can use them in the state forest campgrounds and the state forest park. If I recall, all those parks are located in northeast Minnesota. I don't know if we have any state forest parks in the southern Minnesota or north, up in the northwest corner of the state or down the southeast corner of the state. Most of the forest land is in northeast Minnesota. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, the distribution is largely in the northern part of the state, but they are distributed across the central region all the way down into the southeast in the Richard Doerr State Forest. The only part of the state that really doesn't have any state forest campgrounds representative is the southwest corner of the state.
Representative Johnson.
Okay. But we have ATV trails all over the state that go by a lot of these small regional state park campgrounds. This would be an opportunity to increase the usage of those campgrounds and also increase the economic factors in those communities as well, because these people that do the ATVs, they're not going to be driving on the state park property other than where the cars and the motorcycles can already drive to go into the campground and leave. This would be an opportunity for those people, and they're going to spend quite a bit of dollars in that community, and it could actually boost the economy in those communities. So I'm in favor of this bill. I think it's a good start. It's the way to actually get more people to use the great facilities that we have in our campground.
Okay. Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my family might be going up to Winnipeg this summer, so I'd like to stop in if you want to give a tour on the way.
I'll have my Polaris ATVs there for you. Okay.
Just to clarify, because we often get caught in jargon here, and we're talking campgrounds and parks. So right now, are there any state parks that allow all-terrain vehicles?
Director.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanson, we have state parks and we have state recreation areas. There are no state parks that allow motorized OHV use. There are two state recreation areas, the Gilbert or Off-Highway Recreation Park in Gilbert, and then there is a recreation unit in the southern half of Tetigouche State Park that in 1991 was created as part of the boundary legislation, and it's a state recreation area unit that allows a single trail that goes through that unit.
Representative Hanson.
And Mr. Chair, and state forests are different from both of those as well, correct?
Director.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanson, state forests are distinctly different in that the ORA defines the recreational opportunities that can be allowed in state forests much more broadly, and that's where the vast majority of the grant and aid motorized trails are located, would be on the 4.2 million acres of state forest lands.
Representative Hanson.
And Mr. Chair, I think it's important we have fairly limited time before the deadlines. I asked earlier about chronic wasting disease. I think just looking at the clock, we've spent more time on this very localized bill
than we did on $113 million being spent with legacy funds before we had a discussion on that. A lot of environmental issues. I think we're going to be talking about some of them, but this appears to be a very specific request for the chair's district. And got a little bit here for Lake Vermilion. I'm not quite sure. I don't think that's in your district. So.
That one's district.
So that's why he's been smiling.
Of course.
But, you know, I think we look at what we have in front of us in terms of environmental issues, and this, I'm not discounting this. I know there are a lot of ATVs, and I know that there's a number of folks who use ATVs. But how, what we hear and what we decide to debate and what we put in the bills tells our priorities. And I think there are greater priorities than putting opening up this issue. And we could go through all the cliches that we hear all the time here. You know, the, I think Representative Becker Finn already used slippery slopes. So I'll, you know, I won't use that one, but
dark of the night.
Dark of the night. Well, we're in the daylight today. It's a little foggy out, snowy out there, but we all know them, and I think that's the fear. And it does have a very long, relatively long pilot project end date. So what we talk about, what we consider, sets our priorities, and I think there are higher priorities than this. I think this does present a risk. I understand this will be laid over. There's no vote on it today, so that continuing discussion will be held.
Thank you. Got Mr. Feldman, the Executive Director of Parks and Trails Council, Minnesota. Come on down, please. Thank you, Director. Phil.
Chair Fabian and members of the committee, I'm Brett Feldman, Executive Director for the Parks and Trails Council of Minnesota.
Good morning.
Good morning. Our organization is a grassroots organization that represents more than 4,000 members. For the past 64 years, the Parks and Trails Council of Minnesota has been a distinguished partner in the development of our state's, in our state's outdoor recreation system. We are proud to have worked with lawmakers on both sides of the aisle to make sure that our state's parks and trails are the envy of the nation. I'm here today to speak in opposition to HF 3142. Our members are deeply concerned about the changes this bill proposes. Minnesota State Parks were never intended to accommodate ATVs. The Minnesota Outdoor Recreation Act makes this clear. What's more, this bill runs counter to the state park user preferences. For more than a decade, DNR visitor surveys have clearly and consistently shown that majority of visitors oppose allowing ATVs in state parks. Meanwhile, only about 1 of 10 support the idea. Additionally, the public has made their preferences known during recent master planning input opportunities where the majority of comments opposed the ideas of ATVs and state parks. I think that all of us would agree that listening to your customers is critical to the success of any business enterprise. State park customers are telling us, don't make this change. We are also concerned about the safety issues this change introduces. State park campgrounds are already the most congested areas in parks. They are places where families are camping with young children and where noise is already one of the most common complaints. Adding ATVs to that mix could be catastrophic. The thought of children playing and riding their bicycles on the same campground roads as ATVs sounds like a dizzying new management challenge for park staff who are already stretched thin. To be clear, we are not opposed to ATVs or the people who use them. Our opposition is about ensuring that outdoor activities are compatible with the recreation unit in which the activity is taking place. Our outdoor recreation system has been carefully crafted over many decades so that we have distinct units that take into account the different types of landscapes and user activities that are compatible with those units. We appreciate all user groups who are working to get more people outdoors. We would be happy to work with interested parties in designated ATV-friendly campgrounds in nearby state forests. I know that's been a topic that we've heard a lot about today. But there are reasons why ATVs don't belong in state parks, just as there are reasons why we speak quietly in libraries. State parks have been set aside to be unique, special, and quiet places. Minnesota already has some 4 million acres of state forest land open to ATVs. That's 18 times more land than what is available to state park visitors. this disparity exists despite the fact that 6 times more people visit state parks than own ATVs. If we need more space for ATVs, let's not have it come at the expense of the significantly smaller state parks. Opening the door to ATVs in state parks would be an unprecedented step, one which ignores the opinions of state park visitors. We respectfully ask you to table this bill and instead work to find other ways to expand ATV opportunities that keep our state park heritage intact. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Luik.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'd like to make another comment, and this is something that I hear from folks up in my area. We've got a circumstance where we intentionally push some dollars to parks so we can do things like upgrade the bathroom facilities, those types of things. So I got places where grandpa and grandma out for a ride, completely legal, on the right of way or in a ditch, depending on what type of road they're on, have to park out at the entry to rec areas and state parks and walk in to use the bathroom facilities. Now, what in the world kind of a signal is that to an entire community that is also out there doing outdoor recreation? I am deadly serious about this, and I'm really disappointed with the direction that the parks is taking on this. It's like a great big sign. You people are not welcome to even use our bathroom. And so when I talk about tackling this on a statewide basis, I think we got to back up here and be a little reasonable. You know, we make jokes about the environment, and I mean, when I say talking about weeds, what are they going to do, stand out in the road right away? These are public facilities, particularly those basic ones. So again, Mr. Chair, I fully support this bill, and I think it gives us a look at some things we need to really look at over the future, and it'll give us a picture. I really think we've got reasonable people in Minnesota that can be responsible and not go in and do the things that the calamitous things that everybody is describing is going to happen. So, at any rate, you got my support on this.
Mr. Radke.
I want to make one point very clear. Today, already, in our state parks, snowmobiles are allowed. ORVs are allowed, and so are OHMs, because they're licensed vehicles to use roads. ATVs are the only vehicle that you're not already allowing into your parks. So that, I just want to make sure that you are very clear about the fact we're not looking to do anything more or anything less than what all of these other motorized vehicles are already doing in the parks. We just want to get in, get out, using the same existing roadways that everybody else is already being allowed to use these amenities, to camp, use the facilities and such. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Feltman, I'd encourage you to pick up the phone and give Diane Rosine a call up in Roseville and have a conversation with her, okay? Anything else? Mr. Hackbarth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to just clarify a couple of things that have been talked about, and particularly when it comes to state forest campgrounds. I've repeatedly asked the DNR a number of times about how many state forest campgrounds are open to ATV camping. I've been told 2, and now today it's 5 or 6 or something, I don't know. And also I know that one of those was the Nemadji State Forest, and if you drive into the campground at the Nemadji State Forest on your ATV, you cannot ride the loop where the campgrounds are, where the campsites are. You have to park your ATV in a campsite just as you enter the campground. You have to park there, and then you would have to walk to the campsite. You can't drive your ATV, according to the signage that's there. So that's a little bit confusing to me. But that is one of them that is designated, that you can camp at that campsite. Also, at State Forest Campgrounds, you can camp just about anywhere in Nemadji State Forest. There are little campsites here and there, but not designated campsites. But the point is that we'd like to be able to use those facilities. So there's some tweaking that has to go on, even with the state forest campgrounds. Also, I'd like to point out that the Vermilion site that's in this bill, it's south of the highway. It's not actually within the park. And if you look at the master plan that was put together when we designated this park, the Vermilion Park, it was always part of the plan to develop a campground for ATVs and off-road usage. And that was this area that is already designated for ATV campground. So that's why that is in this bill. It's not in the park. It's still part of the park, but it's on the other side of the highway. So you're not going to be entering the park itself. You'd just be entering the campground that's already supposed to be set aside for ATV camping. So that's where we're at with this bill. And then the campsite up in Hayes Lake State Park, I think it's a good fit for a pilot project, both of these items. So I just wanted to clarify those issues.
Thank you. Anything else? Okay, with that, House File 3142 is laid over for possible inclusion. All right, next, we've got House File 3227. And Director Salo, can you come down and make yourself available? And then, so...
Mr. Chairman? There is an author's amendment, I believe, to that. Ms. Taylor has it.
Yep. We've got members, if you've got the bill in front of you, take a look online. Oops, I'm sorry. I need to move House File 3227 to lay it over for possible inclusion. So the technical amendment, Ms. Taylor, can you walk us through that, please?
Sure, Mr. Chair. The amendment would read on line, or page 1, line 20, delete 11, and insert 10.
Okay. Pretty simple. All right. And then with that, Mr. Radke, proceed.
George Radke, the president of All Terrain Vehicle Association of Minnesota. Mr. Chair, committee, as a representative of the all-terrain vehicles in the state of Minnesota, and a lot of our 200-plus trail ambassadors and a great number more of that, as well as ATV safety instructors, I, too, am an ATV safety instructor. Last year, when this law was passed, I did actually teach youth. Also over the age of 11, but also included in that class were 6 to 10-year-olds. What we found, and also going back and surveying the many of our other instructors, is that it was a little bit more difficult to teach a 6, 7, 8, 9-year-old the laws in the state of Minnesota. One of the things we did ask is that we include a parent, which allowed us to at least make sure that they understood the laws, where you can ride, what you can ride, and what the laws in particular were. But it's a little bit difficult with our current program to actually teach these youth. We did find that the 10-year-olds are on board. These kids are getting it and with our current program. But what we would like to be able to do is add the 10-year-olds to our current certification program, but move the certification back up to 10 and above so that when they turn 12, they will be certified. But what we've been working with enforcement on is to build a free online training and then possibly a hands-on course to actually, first of all, get to the parents and make sure that they understand where they can ride and what they can ride, and second of all, to teach our young kids how to ride, how to be an active rider, how to actually get on this machine other than just sitting on it and pushing the throttle. We want them to know how to ride and be able to recognize obstacles and or dangers. So it would be a prerequisite, and it would be free. So these are kind of what we're looking at as far as this bill is concerned. But mostly what we're looking for is just to get the certification back up to 10. Part of the reason, the other reason for 10-year-olds, 10-year-olds can also ride on public property. And this is a family sport. And it makes sense that if the 10-year-olds can understand the curriculum and they're already able to ride on public property with supervision from their parents, that it makes sense to give them the same certification training we are with 11, 12 to 15.
Director Sales, do you have any comment on the amendment before we adopt it?
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Greg Salo. I'm the Assistant Director for DNR Enforcement Division. We support the concept completely. We do have some concerns with the 6 to 9-year-olds being part of a riding component with actual ATVs that fit them. While some are, this is mainly run by volunteer instructors. They really pull a lot of the weight. And when a 6 or 7-year-old shows up at a class, the instructor feels an inherent responsibility that they make that 6 or 7-year-old follow the program. And to get them on an ATV that actually fits, if they bring their own ATV, they're actually, a lot of the smaller ATVs don't have reverse. That's part of the program. So working through those issues like that with our volunteer instructors to make them comfortable with including those younger children. The free part, we're still working on a fiscal note for that. It's hard to crunch numbers. We don't know how many kids.
Okay. I'd like to do the amendment first before we go.
Sorry, no problem.
Okay. Any other comments on the technical amendment? Okay. So with that, all those in favor of the amendment to changing 11 to 10 signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, the amendment is adopted. All right, to the bill. Director Salem.
So one of our main concerns is, Mr. Chair, is currently right now for someone to get certified in ATV, it costs $29.95 through one of two vendors that we use to provide the online training and certification. We haven't worked up exactly how we would do that and haven't been in discussions with our vendors and how we would cover or what the charge would be for somebody between the age of 6 and 9 to do that for free. So we're working through that process of coming up with a number. That's really the only real concern we have is we can't come up with a cost right now on what it would cost to provide that online portion.
Yeah, I was just going to say, so the plan would be then that the fiscal note has been requested and then we can kind of work off of that. Does that sound right to you?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you the first part.
There's a fiscal note that's been requested.
Correct.
So in terms of the dollars and how you would do this, within the agency and working with your vendors and so forth, obviously those are some things you have to work with AFAM and other folks to kind of iron those things out.
Absolutely. This would be a team project, Mr. Chair, and we'd work with everybody. Once we get those numbers, it'll be a lot easier to frame it up.
Well, I applaud, the agency and AFAM and other ATV enthusiasts because obviously there are going to be some young kids that are going to be riding. And it's like gun safety training. It's like, driver's ed for getting your driver's license. I'm a big supporter of trying to make sure that when we do these things that people are doing them in a safe way. And I support the bill, obviously. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, kids develop at different rates and different ages, and I'm a little concerned about online training at very young ages. I think I just read a study that showed that kids can't even hold a pencil. They don't even have the grip to hold a pencil because they've been so trained to just touch. So if they can't hold a pencil and they're learning to touch a key, how are they going to grip the ATV? They don't have that strength. So I'm fine with online training for a number of things, maybe not an MD, but I am really cautious about online training for 10 and under for something like this. I think there's also, just if we look at the fiscal impact, I think there's studies that show that free things don't always increase participation. Actually having cost shows the value rather than having it free. And I know we chase trying to get people involved early in age, but I think it would be prudent to take a pause on having young children doing online training for operating an all-terrain vehicle.
Thank you. Just a little sidebar here. I see we've got 4 FFA members here. I was at their little reception last night. This is an outstanding group of young people, and the work that they do and the enthusiasm that they bring to what they do is incredible. Would you young folks stand up? There you go. Thank you. We'll have an offline conversation. Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a brief comment, a couple comments, actually. Quickly to the point of grip strength, if Representative Hansen is interested, I have video of my four-year-old son this last weekend riding snowmobile for almost 4 hours with me around our property. And this training, Mr. Chair, I really appreciate this. I've noticed as my kids are going through the ATV training online and numerous other trainings, that the younger kids will actually jump in with the older kids and watch the slides, and it's incredibly rewarding to see them not just wanting to get out and ride, but also wanting to better understand the sport, better understand what it's going to take to be safe. And I really congratulate DNR on some of these things. They've done a great job producing curriculums that are interesting and fun, engaging, and really has, like I had just said it a moment ago, I'll say it again, it's really been great for my kids and for my family. And, you know, as young as 4 years old, and I'm able to enjoy motorsports with my kids in a way with these small ATVs and small four-wheelers that really wasn't an option years ago. It's fantastic. So my hat is off to the folks working on these training programs and implementing these things. And thank you, Mr. Chair, for your bill.
Well, thank you. And to that point, too, I would say that I'm friends with some of my former students who now have children that could be my grandchildren, but they're not. But on Facebook, after every weekend, they're posting pictures of their kids and the snowmobile races that they've got. You know, they got those smaller sleds, and last weekend, one of the kids got their first-place trophy for the snowmobile race that we're in. You know, with all, I get that there's some apprehension to some of these things, but when you live where I live and when you do the things that we do, it's different. My grandchildren come to my house, and I have zero concerns about them being able to grasp a pencil because I've seen them grasp pencils and crayons, and they can do it, and they climb the trees in my backyard, and they hang on to stuff. And, you know, if kids aren't able to grasp a pencil because they've been touching too many things, maybe we need to change some other things that we're doing. With that, Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I can also speak to my own experience. I have a 7-year-old and a 3.5-year-old, as she's always quick to point out. Kids love screens. I mean, they will watch any screen. That doesn't mean that they're retaining the information, however. You know, we had our kids out ice fishing this weekend, and one of my uncles has a Vexlar, and even that, you know, it's even in the fish house, like now we got to watch the screen. You know, kids are drawn to screens, and they'll watch screens and click through things and touch things, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're retaining the information, and, you know, and it also doesn't mean that they're physically capable of operating a machine. I think the problem is that there may be some kids that are capable of that, but some that aren't. You know, developmentally, kids really vary, and I think I also have concerns just about the safety of kids and whether this sort of program for that age child is a good idea. You know, 6 years old is pretty young to be asking somebody to take a training and actually hold on to that information and apply it in life. So, you know, I think well, it sounds like maybe Representative Heintzman's 4-year-old is advanced in, you know, some things. I'm not convinced that because a kid can click through a screen and touch things and watch a screen that means they're actually learning anything. So, thank you.
How many fish did your kids catch?
The 3-year-old reeled in her first keeper, so she was.
So she had to hang onto the pole.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Yep. Mr. Radke.
Mr. Chair, committee, I just wanted to make sure that everybody is understands right now, ATV safety training is one of the top most important things on our agenda today. When this bill was originally introduced and passed last year to put 6 to 10-year-olds on the rolls for certification, mind you, we had some concerns with that. This was not our idea when it came right out, but we decided that we're going to clamp onto this and see if we can create an opportunity to train our children. Now, that being said, understand, training works. We've seen a dramatic reduction in the numbers of kids that have had training with accidents and fatalities that have had training. Training works. These 6 to 10-year-olds are riding today. They're on the trails. They're out places where they shouldn't be, but they're riding. They're there right now today. This is one of the places that we're having an issue with fatalities and accidents. The other side of it is it's people my age that are not required, that were beyond that point where they don't require training in the state of Minnesota. These are the folks that we're having the biggest issues with. One of the things that we did when this bill did come last year, we insisted that if we're going to do this, we will try this, but you need to make sure that it's mandatory that a parent or guardian is there with them. Now, I'm going to tell you right now, as an instructor, the first thing I did when I get these parents in the class is I start teaching the parent, okay? I need to make sure that this parent was going to make sure that this student, the 6, 7, 8, 9-year-old, is going to, these are enthusiasts, mind you, they're going to be riding. But I wanted to make sure that they're continuing their training throughout their lifetime as they hit 12 and become certified. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense. What we're looking at right now is to be able to certify our kids that are in that age group, okay? But we don't want to lose the ability to try to train our younger kids. Well, how are we going to do that? The best way that we know of to do it today is to come up with an age-appropriate online free class. I'm afraid that a lot of people are going to say, well, what am I getting out of it? Well, you're not getting certification, so if we could put a cost to it, so be it. I'm not opposed to that. But we want to make sure that we keep our training fees down. We've also found in the past that once training fees start to increase, we're afraid that a lot of people are just not going to do it. So we want to try to keep our fees as low as we can and still encourage people to take these classes. So we don't want to lose that chance to be able to still keep training our kids. That's why I mentioned that if we were going to do an age-appropriate training for these kids that are younger and or a hands-on portion of this, please do understand, our instructors, they should be instructed, they should know this, but they have the authority to tell a student and their parent, you're not prepared, you're not ready, you cannot pass, you cannot take this class. This is part of something that we need to be more adamant with our instructors about. They have to have this ability to tell these students, you didn't pass. Our goal is not to just pass every kid that comes into our classrooms. If we have issues with them being able to handle a machine or they've got a machine that doesn't fit them, as an instructor, I won't let them ride it. It's against the law. So we don't want to lose this chance to keep training our kids. So if it's not this, we're looking at something else then, but we want to make sure we train these kids. But we need to change what we're doing today because it's not making sense to certify these kids that are 6 to 10 years old with our current curriculum. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Backer.
Chair, thank you. Couple things here. We do know that kids, more so driven by parents and grandparents, will ride ATVs. It's a fact. We ourselves sell 900 ATVs for a year just for kids from 4 to 10. Parents and grandparents are buying it. So it just makes sense that we teach them correctly. Parents and grandparents see it as a way of getting kids away from the screen, out in the outside. That's one of the reasons it drives the sales of youth ATVs each year. One of the things that we do, the company that I run, is we provide safety information, and people really like that safety information. So we know parents and grandparents, actually it's more driven by grandparents than parents, will buy these for their grandkids, especially around Christmas time. And so let's give them the tools to do it. It's safe outside fun. It's a way for kids to get out. So anything we can do, we are seeing a trend of more and more, even in the suburban area, not just in, you know, the rural parts of the U.S., going to this. So let's give them the tools. So I appreciate the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm not going to ask you for a web address.
I can share.
Mr. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. Just thinking about the safety of ATVs, I don't know the answer to this. Are there electric ATVs? And if not, are they in development?
Mr. Radke, I can answer that. There are some. But go ahead.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative, there are, but the bulk of them are actually still toys. They don't usually meet that requirement for as an ATV, I guess, in that sense. Have we actually seen one that's developed for these kids that are older than, I mean, most of them are motorized. You know, they have some form of a motor on them. I haven't seen a real electric one yet.
Representative Lagunas.
I was thinking not just for smaller ones, but for bigger ones, too.
Yeah.
So you know the answer.
I can respond to one. I know that the company that I can see from the back window of my house, they make the EV, it's called, and it's got batteries in it like a golf cart, and I think you can get 35 to 50 miles out of a full charge, and some people carry a little inverter in the back, and if they're out and about and they want to keep the batteries charged up, they can start that up. But there's a few, and my guess is, Representative Wagenius, that they're being worked on. I mean, let's face it, there's all kinds of stuff going on in this world today, and who knows, maybe someday we'll be a throttle, the throttle will be a touch screen rather than a lever. Who knows? Mr. Radke.
Actually, that's...
Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Wagenius.
I'm sorry.
No, we talk about safety for kids, and one of the issues for kids is air pollution. It's really bad for kids. So I'm just thinking about that. You sort of answered my question. Thank you.
Well, when we talk about safety for kids, I'm sure that as I look around the table and here in this room, when you folks were 8 and 9 years old, there were some things that you did that probably weren't very safe that if your parents knew, Representative Clark Johnson. Mr. Radke.
Mr. Chair, Representative, here's the thing that's kind of interesting. Right now, it seems like most of the major manufacturers, they're no longer producing, so to speak, carbureted ATVs. Most of them are fuel injected. And part of the reason is not just for better mileage, but EPA. It has to do with emissions to try to reduce those emissions. And I'm not going to say who it is right now because I don't work for them. But if you were to go on a couple of the websites right now, some of these youth ATVs are actually using a program that's GPS on the machine. You actually have it on your phone, and you can actually control the speed and the location that they can actually ride within now as well, and shut the machine off on them instantaneously, even though you're standing across the room or across the field from them. So we're seeing the manufacturers stepping up, too, for these youth ATVs to give us more ability to help control what our children are doing on these ATVs. So thank you.
Yep. Anything else? Representative Hansen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, I think that today is a good example, maybe to address the students behind us here, that what we're having is legislating by anecdote. You know, all of us know a guy who knows somebody, or our kids are awesome. Everything is awesome until it isn't. Everything is awesome until it isn't. You know, evidence is important. And individual anecdotes help tell the story of what we want. But not everybody is awesome. And I think we just heard that. You know, we just actually heard that all of us probably pushed the limits when we were younger. And when is the age of reason? When is the age of reason? If we look all through time, you know, 6, 7, 8-year-olds being given great authority, great responsibility, maybe some can handle it, some can't, but they're rate of growth and knowledge and experience and abilities is extremely variable. And maybe our kids are better, maybe they're not, but there is a risk here, and I understand the desire, but there's a risk here, and things are changing in how kids learn, and that practical learning with competency, and so most of our training programs are for minimum competency. And I know with training, what if the parent says, you've got to certify my kid,
You're in the community, and somebody says, "Hey, the pressure's there. My kid's awesome. My kid's got to play on the team. My kid's got to do this, do that." So these are important issues that we shouldn't take lightly. And it's always, we always can have a story of somebody who did something, somehow, somewhere. But writing law to that is different. Our responsibility is to everyone, those that could get hit, rather than those who do the hitting as well.
Okay. All right. So then with that, House File 3227 is laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you all. Anything else for the benefit of the group? Representative Hanson, if you'd stick around for a couple minutes afterwards, I'd appreciate it. Anything else? Tomorrow, what day is today? Subcommittee meets tomorrow at this time, at 8:15. Okay. Derek Kuzinski, any comments?
Be there.
Thank you. All right. With that, we're adjourned.